off day for the Toronto Blue Jays. Maybe a good thing. Certainly never a bad thing, especially when you're down, you know, you played 156. You know, a day of rest is probably a good thing. But starting tomorrow, it gets even more serious. Three games against the Yankees, and the Blue Jays hope three meaningful games against Baltimore, all of them at home, John Shannon, and all of them in front of about 30,000 people. And that could be a factor.
Oh, I would think a loud crowd will make a huge difference for the Jays. But I'll tell you what, this is what people wanted for the longest time, meaningful games at this time of the year. And against the arch rival New York Yankees, can't get any better than that, Bob.
Dave Hodge, Dave Perkins will join us, and we'll talk about what has happened so far and what we expect will happen over the next week. It's the last week of the regular season, and it's all up for grabs. It's the Bob McCowan Podcast. We'll commence after these messages. McCowan, Shannon, back with you. I hope you're having a swell Monday. Shannon is sucking on a undoubtedly some alcoholic beverage disguised in a coffee cup.
Isn't that what they do on talk shows?
I think that's what they do.
I know. If you watch the British talk shows, like if you watch Graham, what's his name? Graham Norton. They're all drinking wine on the air. I don't think you're not allowed to show it in the United States or Canada, but in England, you can have a glass of wine on the air. Not a bad idea.
With the two Daves today, Hodge and Perkins with us to talk baseball. But I think we're all old enough to remember the days of the Carson Tonight Show, where they always had that coffee mug on the counter. What's your bet that they were actually drinking coffee at 5:30 in the afternoon, which is when the show was recorded? I'm guessing not much, huh?
I don't think Ed McMahon was drinking coffee.
Oh, people under 30 now have to Google Ed McMahon, Perk. Way to go.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're getting to the point that the Blue Jays fans are going to be drinking the hard stuff in a couple of days, right?
You ain't kidding, pal. Well, six left, all at home, three against the Yankees, three against Baltimore, one game back. Let's start with this. I said last week that what the Blue Jays had to hope for was to go 3-1 in Minnesota, which they didn't, but to get either the Yankees or the Red Sox to sweep. And in my opinion, it didn't matter which one. So the Yankees wind up with the sweep. Any disagreements on that? They can get there. It's up to them.
Well, here's how they get there, Bob. They have to sweep.
Yeah.
They have to win six straight games. And if they do, they're in. If they don't, they're out.
Well, 5-1 can get you in, David.
With some unexpected help from goodness knows where.
Well, sure.
Yeah. But the only clear path is to win six straight games starting tomorrow night with the most uncertain of pitchers on the mound to begin the game for the Blue Jays. If everybody is on the edge of their seat wondering how long Ryu can stay there, it will be quite understandable.
Well, let's talk about Ryu. I mean, the rotation now has Ryu on Tuesday, Berrios Wednesday, and Ray on Thursday. At the beginning of the year, the middle of the year, you would have said, that's about as good as you can get. But the Ryu injury, if that's what it was, has raised some questions. Perk, do you believe that Ryu actually was hurt? Did he twist his neck? Or was this a case of them saying, he's not pitching very well? He's a guy who has needed rest in the past. Let's give him 10 days.
You can believe whatever you want to believe. I mean, all the years I covered guys, my theory was if they say he's hurt. And if he's playing, he's not hurt. That's the way I used to look at it. So I don't think they put guys on the DL, especially in September, or the IL, pardon me, especially in September, unless there's a reason for it. You know what I mean? Like in this case, maybe the reason is to get somebody here who's pitching better. I understand that. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. This guy's been hurt his whole career. Remember that. And he's had two generally healthy years here, which boy, they'd have signed that scorecard the day they gave them all the free agent money, right? That if they'd have known they could have got a year and 5/6 of the second year without his going on the DL, they'd have signed that scorecard immediately. So I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, say, you know, there's a reason he's been stinking. So, you know, let's say it's physical.
Well, let's say it's fatigue. I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
That's possible too.
But I think it could turn out to be a brilliant move. This guy has a history of when he comes back off of injuries, when he's had extended rest or has skipped a start, almost invariably he's been much better when he comes back. And he's pitched a lot for this team. I think this will be his 30th start of the year, I believe. Something like that, Hodge?
And a lot of pitches, sometimes too many. I think they pushed him too hard when they didn't have to. Big leads, and he's over 100 pitches, and that never made a bit of sense to me. And what I see in him the last couple of games is a tired arm. I
agree. You know,
whether the rest can provide some sort of lift for him tomorrow, we'll find out. But it looks to me like there's just nothing left in the left arm. And if that's the case, they're in real trouble, though. What options did they have, really?
Yeah. David, you talked about him pitching too much. Isn't that just reflective of that rather poor bullpen that we saw for the first two thirds of the season?
Well, when you got a big lead, and you know you're going to need the bullpen anyway because there aren't any complete games anymore. Although we almost saw one pitched by Manoah. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to need the bullpen anyway and you're leading by 5 or 6 runs, then get your starter out of there because he is more valuable than anybody but Jordan Romano, let's say, in the bullpen. And I think Robbie Ray is showing some of the same wear and tear, not to that degree, certainly. But I think by and large, yeah, that's the excuse you use. We push the starters because our bullpen is lousy. But, you know, the bullpen is lousy. Wait a minute. Romano's a good closer. Tim Mays is a good setup guy. Simber's been okay. They've had problems along the way. But this team's ERA is 41 points better than the Boston Red Sox ERA. So it's not the pitching that has kept the Blue Jays from a wild card spot at the moment. It is the lack of hitting in recent games. And certainly the two losses in Minnesota showed a team that wasn't ready to hit or do anything properly. And those two games are the reason that they're where they are now and the reason that they need a sweep.
So we're talking about fatigue as being impactful, both from the throwers and from the hitters. Is it more about, this entire league did not play 162 last year. They played almost a little more than a third of that. So you're going to have some guys who aren't used to it. And then you have all these young players, several of whom have not played 162 ever in their careers. Which of those two perk is more impactful, do you think?
I think the latter. I everybody hits a wall sooner or later. And remember, this is a team that never gave anybody a day off. And they play a million blowouts, right? Like this is the best thing the Blue Jays do is they slug in blowouts. That's how they get all their great statistics. And they had all the regulars in games where they scored 12, 15, sometimes 20 runs. They'd leave the regulars in until, you know, the ninth inning in a lot of cases. Like Vladdy Guerrero, did he get a day off this year? Maybe one, the game where they had to tie him to the dugout roof or tape him to the dugout. Remember that one? I think that was his only day off.
I think you're right.
Simeon never gets a day off. They ride these guys hard, but they ride them all the way to the end of blowouts too. And I think this is coming home to roost, like David said. What did they score 12 runs in their first six in a six-game stretch last week? The bats just shut down. Now, mind you, they were still able to have their jackets out. which is all important when you're splitting with a 500 or the last place team. You're playing 500 ball with the last place Twins. It's important to have the ceremonies because God knows you must have fun.
Yeah, for the record, I lost the over under on when the jacket was going to be mentioned.
Jesus, what?
Oh, okay.
I compromised on the jacket and said, you know, do it if it creates or adds to a lead. But the Semien jacket in the loss at Minnesota, when they couldn't hit better than a T-ball team, just simply was laughable. And I'll bet you that Marcus Semien wanted to say, do not put that thing on me.
Yeah.
Because we look lousy, except for the fact that I hit a home run. On Bob's point about a wear and tear, the best team in baseball, 102 wins, I think now, is the surprising San Francisco Giants. And they virtually platoon. They've got two players at every position if somehow the roster provides that. And the Tampa Bay Rays are the best team in the American League, and they do the same thing. They got, if you got a left-handed pitcher on the mound and you got a left-handed batter coming up, no, they have a right-handed batter to put in for it. So what the Blue Jays lack, among other things, is that kind of depth.
Well, they lack a backup middle infielder that they have any kind of trust of. You can put almost anybody at first base if you want to replace Guerrero. They've rotated. I mean, how many guys have played third base this year? Four? I'm guessing, but I think it might be four guys at least that have played at third base. And you have five outfielders, which is sort of curious to me, given that two of them really aren't bangers. They aren't real hitters. Dyson certainly isn't a hitter. He's a defensive guy, if anything.
Why isn't he not really that good there either? And how many bases has he stolen? What's he here for?
Well, I think you nailed it there. I think his greatest asset is stealing bases, but they have other guys that can steal bases, and they don't really use them in that capacity. They don't run them.
I was going to say, how many bases do they steal?
Right. Well, somebody gets some slow foot, some sloth, gets a single and they in the eighth or ninth inning, and they bring Dyson off the bench immediately to go run for him, almost regardless what the situation is. And I'm not questioning that. But to your point, Mr. Hodge, this roster does not have any depth at all.
Yep. And I'll add one more problem for this team while saying that I think they're good enough. And I've always thought they're good enough to be in the playoffs. They lead 1-2-3 across MLB in almost every important offensive category. And a team that hits that well should be in the playoffs. They have a Cy Young candidate, a probable Cy Young winner. They have a Rookie of the Year candidate. They have a good closer. They have a good setup guy. And as I say, they got an ERA that's miles better than the team that's a game ahead of them. They should be in the playoffs, but there are reasons that they're not. And another one, I'll say, and perhaps quite understandable, is this team hasn't matured yet. I don't know if you remember the last at bat of Bo Bichette on Friday night, I think it was. He was like a 12-year-old who said, I don't want to be here. I want to go home and play my video games. He went to the plate. He swung at three horrible pitches and turned away in disgust. And honestly, I don't think Vladimir Guerrero is obviously not mature yet at the age of 22. I don't think the MVP chance have helped him. I don't think the Triple Crown talk helped him. And goodness knows, he's not going to win the Triple Crown. And he's not going to win the MVP. He had a great first half. He has not had a great second half. And these two players are, you know, 3-4 in the order, and they need to get older and they need to get more mature. They're both terrific players, but they're not quite there yet. Under these pressure situations, you saw Vladimir Guerrero in Minnesota 1-for-17, and the one was a roller up the third baseline.
There's no argument from me. The one thing I will say about Bichette is that historically, and I mean, how much history can you have with a 22, 23 year old guy, but even through the minor leagues, he is a very streaky hitter. Mm-hmm. And that is not uncommon in this game, as we all know. And when he is not on, he looks horrible because, as you said, he swings at so many pitches that he should be laying off of. He's not the least bit interested in taking a walk unless you throw it over the screen. And even then, he'd think about reaching up and trying to hit it. But when he's not on a hot streak, he's very cold, and he's sort of there now. But when he's hot, which he was, a month ago, Perk?
Yeah.
Lights out.
But this is the story all throughout Major League Baseball.
Of course.
There's nobody hotter or more ugly looking than Giancarlo Stanton. When he's off, we could get him out. And when he's on, he's hitting them 800 feet in the clutch, which is, huge for him. He's the same way. Judge is the same way. You can strike out Judge four or five times in a game. But when he's on, boom, away it goes. And that's why I think the Jays can take two out of three from the Yankees this week. I don't have any problem believing that. This is the worst Yankee team in 30 years, the way they play the game. It's a terrible defensive team, a terrible base running team. As the Blue Jays are not much better. But, boy, the Yankees are horrible that way. And the Yankees have scored, I think, 150 fewer runs than the Blue Jays. And they've yielded roughly the same amount of earned runs because New York's defense is so horrible. You saw them dropping two pop-ups last night. Mm-hmm. And then they won the game because Boston dropped the pop. It's – these are not good teams. These three teams are not good teams.
Toronto, Boston, and New York. We've made
I do think the Jays are the best of the three.
I don't disagree.
You got the best pitching.
Well, but you gotta be careful with this run differential stuff because we've talked about it a fair bit.
I understand.
This Blue Jay team, as mentioned, has had more blowout wins probably than anybody in Major League Baseball, and that skews all kinds of numbers.
Right.
And it isn't really representative of whether you're good or not, because a good team wins close games. Good teams win close games.
I disagree. A good team wins 12-1. A bad team wins 4-3. I think that's one of the falsehoods of baseball history. I think if you look it up, the best teams win by a lot, and the bad teams go 30-26 in one run games because that's the only way they can win.
You got to look deeper than that, don't you? You got to look at the bullpen was horrific for 4 months for this team.
Sure. But you got to look at, I say, toss out all numbers. The only thing that matters is how does the team play the game today? And we're talking about they go into Minnesota. How many leadoff doubles do they get where the guy never even makes third base? Remember when they went in and got swept?
Oh, no, it happens regularly.
They got swept in Washington about a month ago. Remember when they had a real ugly thing, and they got five leadoff doubles in that game, and not one of those games, and not one of the runners ever got to third base. It's terrible fundamentals, and it's baseball wide.
No, they don't play the game the right way very often. Corey Dickerson tries to score and is thrown out by a mile at home plate, down four runs.
Right.
If there was a stop sign there, it was half a stop. It was an orange sign, and there is not a chance in the world that anybody tries to score down four runs. And George Springer standing on third base watching a 5-4-3 double play occur,
right,
and not walking home is it might have been the dumbest thing I've seen in baseball all year.
Right. And you see it regularly with this team. And you see it regularly with all teams. That's the problem with baseball.
But based on the way that these three teams, by the way, hey, we should also mention the Seattle Mariners are a game behind the Jays. The Seattle Mariners play the rest of their games at home as well. I don't think we should just think this is an American League East issue to fight for the wild card.
I don't know that there's a mathematical way Seattle can get there with the Jays and the Yankees playing each other. I haven't looked into that, but
you don't think a sweep one way or the other, Dave? Particularly the Yankees sweep.
Well, if the Yankees sweep, the Jays are out.
That's okay.
Basically.
So if the it depends
on what the Red Sox do.
Okay, you know, so if they get swept by Baltimore, you're right. Toronto's still alive. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of.
I don't think the Mariners have been eliminated yet. So
no, you're right.
And here's to go back to the last controversy that the Jays were involved in, but Kevin Kiermaier wants to play the Blue Jays in the playoffs, right? Well, Tampa Bay plays the Yankees the last three games of the season. So if Kevin wants to do a dugout speech and say, let's sweep the Yankees so we can get the Blue Jays into the playoffs so I can play them and say hi to Alejandro Kirk again and tell him I know all the approaches to our hitters. Great. Kevin Kiermaier might hold the key to the Jays' playoff chances.
I was going to say, Tampa still has something to say about this because Tampa has the three games in New York on the last weekend of the season. And I looked up the numbers just for interest sake. Tampa's 9-7 against the Yankees and 11-8 against the Blue Jays. So the huge difference is Tampa has a 2.3 ERA against the Yankees and a 3.6 ERA against the Blue Jays. Blue Jays have scored more than 30 runs more against Tampa. So here's Tampa with McClanahan, Baz, Rasmussen, all these young guys. And the Yankees never do well facing a pitcher for the first time. So I think the Rays have got a lot to say about it. That's why.
Well, it depends how hard they play and whether.
That's exactly right.
As much exactly as Kevin right. Kiermaier apparently cares, I don't think he really does. So this may be three games of, take it easy, Tampa, wait for the wild card winner.
Absolutely might be.
Well, historically, that's usually the way this happens. You're going to set your rotation up. Tampa's in a position. They are the only team, really, in the American League East, or including Seattle, that can set their rotation for the postseason.
Did anybody see the newspaper headline? Thankfully, there was a question mark at the end of it. Montoyo Manager of the Year?
I did see that.
Mm-hmm. This is the greatest fourth place team in history. They got the Rookie of the Year, the Manager of the Year, the MVP, and the Cy Young winner, and they're in fourth place. Golly, isn't that fantastic?
Without beating on Charlie Montoyo, unless we want to, what sort of case can be made for him as Manager of the Year when the Seattle Mariners, as John suggests, are a game behind the Blue Jays? With not nearly the roster that the Jays have, nor the performance. And he's not going to be the manager. He shouldn't be. It should be Kevin Cash, honestly.
Sure.
Look at the Tampa roster. Look at their record. And you don't have that record unless you're well managed.
Well, I don't know how you guys feel, but I think in every sport, a vote for manager coach of the year is an exercise in futility. And in almost invariably, it's the guy who is perceived to, whose team has done more than was expected. It's almost, I mean, that's how it works.
That would be Tampa every year.
Well,
the team
I don't know.
That gets the team that gets more for the less money.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But let's put that criteria down for manager of the year or coach of the year. I think it's the most ridiculous electoral process, and it applies to all sports because you're looking for something unique, different, creative in order to make your evaluation, and there isn't anything. How the hell do we know who motivates them better, who puts out a better lineup?
But is there not some proof that Kevin Cash knows what he's doing?
Hell yes.
Except for Blake Snell and the
all right, but you could make the case that the Tampa Bay manager should have got manager of the year for at least three or four straight years.
Well, that's my
could
point. Could
you not? Yeah. But they'll never do that, will they?
No, it's always got to be somebody different.
It's got to be somebody different, which effectively makes it a ridiculous and useless exercise.
Hey, I
wish they just stopped doing it.
Hey, I want to go back to something that David said about Guerrero not winning the MVP when we're talking about awards. So does this mean you're on the Ohtani bandwagon between now and the end of the regular season, Dave?
He doesn't need a bandwagon.
No, but I'm just saying, it is funny because we talked about this, Bob and I talked about this, I guess, about a week ago, right, Bob? About, you know, at least Guerrero's team is in the playoff hunt. Last I checked, the Angels are under 500.
And where would they be without the guy who hits all the home runs and pitches every fifth or sixth day?
Dave, about the same place, and who cares?
Yeah.
It's the most valuable player. It's not best player.
Yeah.
If you owned a team, who would be more valuable to you, Shohei Ohtani or Vladimir Guerrero?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting way to ask the question, but I'm not sure that matters in an MVP voting.
I just think that in a team sport, I think when the goal is to get to the postseason and win the championship, I think that value to your teams has to speak volumes, don't you?
So being close to the playoffs is good enough?
Well, I think, you know, we have to wait until my ballot's not in until next Monday.
Oh, okay.
Kirk, do you get a ballot still?
No, I'm retired. I did vote in all these things for, you know, 20-odd years.
What's your take on it? Does an MVP have to play for a team that has some level of success?
My take on it is, how can you be the MVP of the league when you're not even the MVP of your own team? Because I think Marcus Semien has passed Guerrero as the MVP of the Blue Jays. What Semien's done is absolutely historic. And I understand Guerrero's had probably the best hitting year of any Blue Jay. I get all that. I mean, it compares favorably to George Bell's MVP year. But this is no knock whatsoever on Guerrero. But God almighty, Bichette's had a tremendous year. T. Oscar Hernandez has had a tremendous year. Semien's had a better than tremendous year. Springer, when he's healthy, has had a tremendous year. Even the guy who acts like an 8-year-old,
Guriel,
he's had a terrific. He's driven in 90. You know what I mean? Like they've up and down the lineup, they've had a tremendous amount of production. It's not just Guerrero. Guerrero has had more big hits than anybody, I would say, except Semien. Semien's been fantastic. So, you know, if Guerrero won it, I would be absolutely fine with it. But I'm saying, boy, don't overlook Semien either.
Well, no, nobody's overlooking anybody.
I don't know how you get two guys out of three.
And Semien may finish third in the voting. But Semien's hitting 40 points. But I know nobody cares about batting average anymore. But I'm a dinosaur, and I'm not going to apologize for it. Semien's hitting 40 points below Guerrero. Guerrero's got more home runs. Guerrero has done an excellent defensive job at first base, especially for a guy who hasn't played much.
Good job. Yep.
You know, he's had he launches the ball on a regular basis. Even his outs Semien have a yard hit.
Semien is by far a better defender on the funny numbers.
I'll give you that. And I value the, like everybody else does in baseball, the middle of the diamond. You know, center fielder, shortstop, second baseman, you know, catcher. You need quality there in order to win. I got nothing against Semien, except he's hitting 40 points less than Guerrero is. And I can't overcome that. So he's third in my voting. And I don't know whether I vote for Ohtani, who has cooled off offensively, by the way, versus Guerrero. And I think
who has cooled off, by the way.
Yeah. Who also is cooled off, by the way. But at this moment in time, I'm probably going to go with Guerrero because the Blue Jays have a chance to get to the postseason.
I don't know who should win, but I know Ohtani will win.
Well, I think you're right.
No, but so this goes back, David. Do you think it's important to measure team success in the MVP balloting?
I think in any other season that would be a consideration, but Ohtani breaks all the rules and changes all the rules and is one of a kind and is going to be in the voters' minds the most valuable player because he hits home runs like almost nobody else. He pitches very well. and he sometimes does both in the same game. And if Joe Maddon doesn't think he's never seen a more valuable player, I'd be very surprised, because what manager wouldn't want, hey, my pitcher's going to hit second and maybe hit himself a home run and help himself win a game. I mean, the guy's, he's one of a kind, and he's going to be rewarded for that in the MVP voting. If he were hitting 20 home runs and having, you know, a 6-8 record on the mound, the fact that he hits and pitches at the same time wouldn't win in the MVP award. But he, you know, he's among the home run leaders, and
he's good at both.
Pitched,
yep.
He's pitched a double digit victories, and he steals bases, by the way, anytime he wants to, really. So
we get it, Dave. He's good.
I rest my case.
You know, it's a valid.
Does anybody want to beat up on Alex Rodriguez?
Go ahead. Yeah, I think you do.
No. It's because we're all in the broadcast business or the media business or whatever. So he's doing last night's network game, right? Yankees, Red Sox.
Yeah.
Clay Holmes of the Yankees strikes out 3 straight battles. And wow, Clay Holmes is great. Alex Rodriguez wonders if the Yankees can bring Clay Holmes back to start the next inning, have him face just one batter, and be removed.
There's another rule.
Has to check the rule to see if that's possible. The 3-batter minimum rule. The 3 batters that he struck out the previous inning, 1, 2, 3 adds up to 3. And sure, he can come back and pitch to a 4th guy. And Alex Rodriguez did not know that.
Nor did Vasgersian.
No, they had to look it up.
That's pretty sad, isn't it?
I think so. Shouldn't you know the rules?
Well, at least some of them, and that one isn't really tough.
Or somebody could say, oh, they changed that rule. So
yeah. We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll chat some more. I got a couple more things to discuss, and we'll do it when we return after these messages. McCowan, it's Shannon, it's Hodge, it's Perkins. We've mentioned most of the names here. The importance of Gurriel being able to play, maybe more importantly, Gurriel being able to hit, and I think that's the issue for me. Being in the outfield, he's decent, can throw for sure, and it is his right hand, Perk, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so the throwing could be an issue, but I don't know how you hit. If you've got a deep cut that required 2 stitches, I don't know how you hold on to a bat. How important is his possible absence to this team? Even though he hits in the 6 or 7 hole. Pretty important, I think.
Well, he's just, the Yankees are starting 3 right-handers, so you figure Dickinson was going to play anyway, right? So
I wouldn't. If Gurriel's healthy, Dickinson doesn't play for me.
If he's healthy, I mean, that's the story. Sure, he gives you your best lineup if he can hit, but if he's going to be a problem at the plate, he can be a problem in the field. But, and Perk makes the point that his injury should never have happened because he shouldn't have been
near
Randall Grichuk making the playoff at all.
Can't argue that point. Well, but he's had some brain cramps. There's absolutely no doubt about it.
He almost killed Dyson in Tampa last weekend. Like, that was a very scary near collision. And if Dyson isn't a smart veteran who reads this guy's 50 feet out of position, and Dyson doesn't sidestep him, that is really ugly. That one,
okay. The best thing out of the last 2 days was that George Springer got some hits, including some homers, because as long as he was going to lead off and do what he was doing, that was going to be a big problem. The question is, does he DH or does he play in center field? And that affects what the rest of the lineup looks like. But if he's hitting, that really helps, because adding his slump to Guerrero's slump, Bichette's slump, they were really going to have a problem. At least if Springer and Semien and Teoscar can keep hitting, you hope Guerrero can rise to the occasion, and the same with Bichette. And then who follows them? If it's Gurriel, then you hope he's healthy enough to hit, and he can hit well. The bottom of the order, who knows? I mean, the biggest hit of the weekend for them and their two wins was Danny Jansen's three-run homer. Oh, and who would have expected that? Third base is third base. You never know what you're going to get. And who am I missing? Outfielder, I guess. Whoever the other outfielder is.
Well, but I think you got it all. I mean, is Espinal destined to be the third baseman for the next six games at least?
Probably should be. Although Valera can, I know they like him off the bench because he's a switch hitter. But he's done good work too.
Yep.
What would you do, Perk?
I play Espinal to me, you got to catch the ball. You can't win unless you catch the ball. And Espinal's a good defender for my money. And because, that makes the pitching better too. So I want a guy who catches the ball first and foremost. You got plenty of hitting in this lineup. There's bats up and down the lineup. You can carry a guy. And I like Kirk too as a hitter. I know he's been going through some dry spells lately, but I like Kirk. He'll go the other way. He's had it. He was big in that series where they swept the Yankees in New York.
These Yankees, good or bad, we must say, have not been on this kind of high all season. I mean, they are coming here without an airplane after what happened in Boston, and that has to help, especially the guys that won the game for them. When Judge and Stanton are hitting the ball out of the park, the Yankees, could beat anybody. The problem is that, they can strike out a bunch of times too. But boy, oh boy, they got to feel great about what they did in Boston, and even though the Red Sox helped them do it.
All three teams, though, have been so streaky when you think about it, particularly the second half of the season. Is it probably going to be, Perk, do you think, the team with the last streak that gets the last laugh?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why, I mean, as big as these three games are, I just don't see them as being decisive unless there's a sweep one way or the other. I mean, the Blue Jays got to win too. I get that. But I still think it can come down to the last weekend. Tampa and New York is going to have some say in it. And don't forget, Tampa and Houston are tight for the number one record, right, in American League. Okay.
Tampa's well in front.
Well, but they play this week, right?
Tampa and who? Sorry?
Houston. It was Houston. Don't they play this week?
What does that matter, Tampa and Houston?
Well, home field.
If Houston, if Tampa loses out.
No, it's the Giants. The Giants have the best record in baseball.
Yeah, no. I mean, the American League for your home.
Oh, no. I think Tampa's three or four or five games ahead.
Okay. So they can't get caught.
Well, I doubt it. Another factor here is, whether or not the Jays win or lose, this ought to be a lot of fun.
Sure.
With an increased attendance, the Rogers Center, like we haven't heard it or seen it for a while, a bunch of Yankee fans will be there. And let's hope that something can build from the Tuesday game and that the bubble just doesn't burst, because I do not think that the Jays have a chance if they don't sweep. So Tuesday, you got to win. Wednesday, you got to win. And if it gets to Thursday and they have won the first two games, my goodness, then you got a game that can put you into the playoffs.
With Ray on the mound too.
With Ray there, yeah.
I'm not comfortable with this three catcher thing. I don't know. It sort of just kind of happened. It didn't really evolve. And more importantly, that the three catchers seem to, on a more or less equal basis, rotate. who play? Is this the time to pick one of these three or and ride them over the last six games?
You know, if they
or is this all tied to pitching versus pitcher? This pitcher pitches to this catcher.
If they had another pitcher that they thought they could use and put in the bullpen, I don't think they carry three catchers.
Right.
But the lack of availability of a pitcher that they could trust makes them say, you know, we got three catches. Might as well use them. It provides.
Well, it looks sounds like you pop your microphone there, Hodge.
I don't know what I did. Can you hear me?
Yeah, yep. We can.
I just turned my phone off.
Well, from my perspective, they're all about equal. I don't see any one of the three being better than the others. They're all pretty good defensively. None of them are particularly great offensively. Perkins, you're going to disagree?
I do think Kirk's got the most upside, both ways. He's not great defensively, yeah, but I think he can hit. Remember, he's only 22, and, he's not the finished product that
Well, I get it, but I'm not worried about the future. I'm worried about the next six games.
Right. Well,
and if there's a right-hander on the mound, are you going to go with Jens or with McGuire because he's a left-handed hitter?
Kirk is going to catch Ray. Otherwise I'd play Jensen.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to argue. And what about the bullpen? If we get past this week and the Blue Jays make the postseason, are we sure Mets is going to be out of the pen? Is he the odd guy out from the rotation?
Wouldn't it depend what Ryu does tomorrow?
Yeah. And actually, how long do you go with Ryu tomorrow? I mean, how long do you are you patient with him, or
if it wasn't an insult, while he was warming up on the mound to throw his first pitch, somebody would be warming up in the bullpen.
But well, that would be an insult. Yes, that would be an insult, and so I think we can eliminate that possibility.
But it almost gets to that. You can't, if he's going to get, the first three guys are going to whack single, double, triple, home, or whatever. You got to get him out of it.
Look, I
remember,
think
this is the guy a year ago that they gave $80 million to, mm-hmm. and then didn't start him in the playoffs, in the first game of the playoffs. So. They went with the opener in the first game of the playoffs. So, they've already kind of voted with their feet how they feel about him that way, I think.
He has success against the Yankees. There's no doubt of that. And they're relying on that, I'm sure. And they're hoping, I don't know if you can rely on it, they're hoping that the rest has helped. Because, as I say, those pitches, we've been up close and watching them.
Yep.
They're doing nothing. And he has to be at or near his best. They got Cole Wednesday, mm-hmm. which doesn't sound good.
But Cole's had a couple of rough outings the last two
weeks. He's not unbeatable. He's not unbeatable.
Yeah.
But the Jays, we need to have a cliche here, but it never mattered more to say it's got to be one game at a time. That's how they'll have to look at it.
Look, I think we all feel the same way. If you're around this game long enough, you understand that the times that your team is playing meaningful games in the last week of the season, they are generally few and far between. It hasn't happened here since 2016, really. I mean, last year was whatever it was. And the Blue Jays are there. They're playing meaningful baseball games in their last six. So I can't wait for tomorrow. I can't wait for it to start. And I'll probably be pacing like many others.
Let's see if they're playing meaningful baseball in their last three.
Well, we'll know that by Friday. Yeah,
it is kind of, you got to chuckle to think that the Baltimore Orioles are part of this somehow or could be.
Mm-hmm.
Their home season ends against the Red Sox. And if you're telling me that the Jays can afford to lose the game and still make the playoffs, then they're going to need help from either the Orioles or the Washington Nationals. So, and then Baltimore comes here, of course. And wouldn't it be ironic if They had something to say about the Jays not making it after being beaten for what was it, 44 runs in 3 games
in an hour,
the last time they were here.
Yep.
So they got the, Baltimore's got some motivation, whether they got any ability to win or not. I don't know. They can hit a little bit, but they sure can't pitch. So we'll see. It's really the highlight of the Orioles season the last week, just like everybody else.
Boys, sort of. Enjoy the week, and we'll gather again to address the postseason, whether the Blue Jays are in it or not. Mr. Hodge, Mr. Perkins, thanks very much. We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye, gentlemen.
We'll be back in a moment. So we are not in the business of prognostication, and we really aren't that good at it, and neither is anybody else that's got any kind of on-air position. But what do you think, just for the hell of it? They make it, they don't.
I don't think they make it, and I think, I mean, right now, if you got to go with the hot hand, and the New York Yankees are the hottest team in the American League, you know, or at least the American League East.
Well, the 3 games against Baltimore, I mean, ultimately, you're going to have to win at least one of those games. Yeah. But if you sweep New York, you're in a position to determine your own fate. And I think that's and even if you take 2 or 3, you might still be in.
Talk to me Friday morning about that. That becomes the key. I mean, do you see? I mean, I didn't see the Yankees sweeping the Red Sox. But do you see either team sweeping these 3 games?
Yeah, sure I do.
You do?
Because this has been a completely unpredictable season, and you pointed to it.
Yeah.
The Red Sox have had a great run early in the year. It looked like they were going to walk away with the division. They were ahead of Tampa for the longest time. Yankees, what did the Yankees win? 13 in a row?
13 in a row at one point, yeah. And then went on a swoon almost as bad.
Exactly. Toronto Blue Jays won like 19 out of 22 or whatever the hell it was. All of these teams are capable of going on runs.
Yeah, there's only two teams really in this division that have been consistent, Tampa and Baltimore.
Yeah, Baltimore bad, Tampa good.
That's right.
And the middle has been who the hell knows.
Yeah.
And it can start and stop on a dime. So, and look, I think that's great because now, you know, now we can pace, as I said before, pace up and down in front of the television set, not really knowing what to expect. Anything can happen here because it's happened all year. Quickly, before we go, a couple things we wanted to talk about. We didn't mention the Ryder Cup, and with good cause, because I don't know what the hell you say. It was a complete and total annihilation. And I would say I didn't expect it. Not because of the rankings, because I heard them talking about, you know, how many of the top 10 Americans, you know, were in the field. That's a crock of crap, because that has meant almost nothing historically. The European team, generally speaking, have found this way to overcome the quality of the opposition. And this year they couldn't. This year they got annihilated. On a golf course, it's essentially a Lynx course.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Steve Stricker designed his team for this golf course.
Stricker took the best players.
The guy's on, as we talked about Wednesday, Scottie Scheffler hasn't even won a PGA event, and he got on this team, and then he was lights out this week.
Okay, but he was the only guy that was questionable on this American team. But everybody else was obvious.
When you looked at, I guess my point is that when you look the way Stricker was able to put the pin placements, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, in the back half of all these greens, it played into the big balls that the Americans play and the long ball that the Americans play. This was a golf course that fit perfectly with the American golfers. And the other thing is, Bob, let's face it, the European team was too loyal to their older players, And
Garcia played okay. I mean, Garcia and Rahm were the bright lights for the European team overall.
Yeah.
And almost nobody else did almost anything.
Well, like Lee Westwood, Ian Poulter, even Rory.
Well, Poulter won his singles match at least.
Yeah, but that was after losing the first three.
You're right. 100%.
But it was over by then. We're going to have to see some young guys from Europe when they play next year, next time in Italy. We're going to see some young guys, younger guys from Europe, if they expect to be in this Ryder Cup matchup.
Now, I was probably in my crib at the time, but in the 1960s, Tom Dempsey, with half a foot,
yes,
kicked a 63-yard field goal to set the NFL record.
For the New Orleans Saints.
Correct. That record was destroyed this weekend. Justin Tucker kicked one 66.
And, well, hey, listen, if you're a Detroit Lions fan, how frustrating would it be? Your team actually plays a pretty good game.
Yeah, what are the chances? Guy lines up for 66, and you go.
Bob, it hits the crossbar. And with the angle of the football, it bounces over rather than back. I mean, come on. That's
still 66.
Bad luck is bad luck if you're a Lions fan. Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's 9 feet longer than any in history.
Yeah.
3 yards longer.
Three.
I mean, that's a lot, John.
Oh, no. Listen.
Now, Tucker, I don't know how many 66-yard field goals have even been attempted in the history of the NFL. Would you guess?
Well,
five.
I actually think that Arizona attempted a 68-yard field goal, and somebody returned it for a touchdown on Sunday as well.
Yeah, but how many teams would even try that?
No. Well, but
they had to. You know,
this guy's going to the Hall of Fame, Bob. This guy's he's the most consistent. He's been the best kicker for a decade in the National Football League. That's how good Tucker is.
Well, I get that, but 66 is really far.
You know what I mean? Two-thirds of a football field.
Holy mackerel. Anyway, again, we thank Dave Hodge and Dave Perkins for joining us on the program. We'll see you tomorrow. For John Shannon, it's Bob McCowan. Bye-bye.